Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, this is going to be quite a conversation. I'm looking so forward to it. My guest's name is George, and he is from the Conspiracy Cafe out of Canada. But I'm going to let him say his name once again, and then, George, once you do that, I'd like you to tell people a little bit about who George is and how you got started with what you do.
Oh, surely. My name is George Freund, pronounced like Dr. Sigmund Freud in a way. It means friend in German. And I got started in this kind of just by a very roundabout way. I read a lot and study a lot, and just by some weird coincidence where I worked, they took away our FM radios, and we had to start listening to AM, and about the only thing we could agree on was talk radio. And when we heard some of the things going on talk radio, we were just absolutely aghast at the disinformation and spin that was put out to people in general. And, you know, we had some spare time on our hands here and there, and we just ended up livening up the debate to a degree. And we ended up getting quite a following over the years where, you know, people would just recognize your voice because you'd be on some of the top talk stations all the time and say, yeah, you're that guy, George. I hear you all the time on CFRB or this station or that station. And, you know, then we started to realize we're getting quite a following. And then through another stroke of luck, I ended up taking a night course at U of T and met some people in alternative media. And they said, hey, you know, you got to start doing this as a show. And we want you to come on our show. And at first it was a small internet station with a friend of mine who did a show called Spy Man. And we did that for a good few years. And we were really rocking it around quite nicely, and then I got a guest spot all the time for some strange reason, a very bizarre thing in Canadian media history and maybe in world media history, but one of the big AM stations would give me 15 minutes of free time every Saturday night to say anything I wanted, uncensored, unedited, and straight for the throat. And that became a very, very dangerous position to put me in. So 50,000 watts out of the CN Tower, we went everywhere. And as I understand it from another radio show host who got axed on that network, he told me it was the President of the United States himself who called the Prime Minister of Canada and just said, get those people off the air. And, of course, being good corporate citizens, they did. But that didn't stop us. We just morphed into that channel in Toronto, both of us. And the show was called Cloak and Dagger on Mojo Radio in Toronto at the time that was canceled. And now it's called Bloom and Steel, and it does the same thing I do. And they're on just after me, so we're still really taking them to task. And fate has its way of just making things happen. I met other people at that station, that channel, and we did two other shows, Cosmic Horizons and another one called Shaking a Spear. And that gave me a good grounding in what I'm doing. And then I just started to do my own, mostly because the other chaps had some problems financing their shows, and they fell by the wayside. But I do this on my own and just keep it going. And the listenership's just growing and growing and growing because we come up with some very interesting material that it's right before your eyes. Everybody sees it. And for some strange reason, no one notices. And that just astounds me. Maybe because I was a policeman for a while, my powers of observation are a little bit better. But there's fine detail. We'll just say we'll take your recent assassination attempt on Congresswoman Gifford. Three pictures came out of the suspect, Jared Lee Loeffner. The guy who's in court in custody has brown eyes. The Facebook page where he's wearing a wool cap has blue eyes. Now, I'm not a rocket scientist, but they don't match. And then the third picture where he doesn't have a cap is where he's standing at the Tucson Book Fair, and you can see his ear very, very clearly, and you see the ear from the mugshot or the court appearance as well very, very clearly. And I blow them up, and I look at them and analyze them and use my police science skills, and I notice the ears are very different. One ear has a very large protuberance at the top of the earlobe, and the other one doesn't. And then one ear has a very long ridge along the edge, and the other one doesn't. They're not the same guy. So how does this get hoisted upon all of us that we have these pictures before hundreds of millions or billions of people and nobody sees the flaws?
That's real easy to answer, George. My theory is that people would rather keep their heads buried in the sand and have their butts kicked really hard rather than start to take responsibility and do what's really what, you know, should be done, and to really start talking about how a lot of the conspiracy theories are probably very much true.
Oh,
and so
yeah.
People are afraid. You know, they're afraid. You hear all the time, well, somebody was talking about this on their radio show, and all of a sudden their show's gone. You know, so people tend to get really afraid. But the truth of the matter is, until people take their head out of that sand, they are going to continue to be duped. And again, their butt will be kicked very hard. So, you know, it's all coming to a head, and it will continue to come to a head as more people start to, again, take their head out of the sand. You know, the thing that's going on in Egypt, most of the people probably don't know a lot of the stories that led up to that. Now, you do, because you've investigated it a lot, and you sent me some very interesting information about it that would probably stun and amaze people. So why don't you give them some facts that they've probably not heard on any media anyplace?
Well, the most surprising thing about Egypt is the fact that the ringleaders, or, you know, leaders of the so-called rebellion or protest, came to the United States in 2008, and they met people in Washington, high-level people in Congress. And some of this came out in the WikiLeaks information as well. And then you just have to really amaze yourself to say, wait a minute, this was supposed to be like a spontaneous combustion. If it was spontaneous, then we seem to have a plan here being carried out at the same time. So if there was a crime and you and I were together and they knew we were talking about the same thing 2 years in advance, they'd probably be very interested in our activities if we were committing a crime and law enforcement was investigating a crime. But here we have something happening where these dissidents come to a summit. There was an activist summit in New York, and then they returned to Cairo. The activists took on, you know, cooperative information from U.S. diplomats, and they were talking about how to put together a plan to overthrow Mubarak. So in secret diplomatic cables, it says on December 30th, 2008, Margaret Scobie, the U.S. ambassador in Cairo, recorded the opposition group's secret plans for regime change before the next September elections. Well, that's very pertinent. And even more pertinent is the fact that while they were in the United States, they got to talk to, at least as far as this diplomatic cable is concerned, people in the think tanks. But they didn't say which think tanks, just think tanks. And generally one of the most popular ones is Rand Corporation. They've put out even a manual on how to do some of these things, like control the media, orchestrate regime changes, and such. And some of them are declassified. You just have to pay the money to buy the paper and see what the research is. And one of the Department of Defense ones I found a couple of years ago, when we had this horrible thing there where they showed cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, I looked at it as a false flag intelligence operation to tick off the people in the Islamic faith and make them attack you or get angry with you, angry enough to attack, and step into a trap where you turn on the lights and the sound at the appropriate time and capture them on film and spread it around the world to say, see, look, they're terrorists. But at the same time, nobody saw me step on their toes and poke them in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see the whole picture that you stepped on your toes, poked the guy in the eye, and then he came and hit you with a club, it adds a whole lot more perspective to the story.
I would think so. Now, you also made a statement that in 2008, Hillary told the Saudi royal family to retire before the uprising in the near future.
Yes, that was, I just have the luck of the Irish when it comes to, to going online and finding information. And that was one of the little snippets, is that, you know, she meant and interviewed the Saudi royal family and told them flat out that it would be a good idea for them to get out of their country before there's a regime change. And I just found that absolutely flabbergasting that, she could be so flippant to go to their country, meet them on their own turf, and explain the facts of the world about that. But then she's well quoted saying that, you know, the perfect storm is coming. And, of course, if you're in a laboratory making the perfect storm, well, you know very, very well that the perfect storm is coming and exactly how it's coming. And this is not just a small storm. This is a storm that looks like it's going to be affecting many, many nations in the Middle East. And I had the good fortune, you know, some time ago, because I read a lot, to come across a book called Lights, Camera, War. And it's, Is Media Technology Driving International Politics, written by the foreign editor of USA Today. And when you see the examples of how they can manufacture a story to make anything appear the way they want it to appear, to affect how you interpret, like, what you're going to do and what you think. So they completely and totally grab your brain and manipulate the facts that go into it, so you'll come to a prearranged conclusion, and it's not a conclusion that's going to benefit you in any way, shape, or form. You won't even get to put your head in the sand, but they're going to kick your butt.
Yeah, isn't most of the speeches that are given by whatever president or whatever government happens to be there in whatever country at the time, aren't those designed especially to have people stay asleep or to be la-la because of the tone of the voice or the words that they use?
Yes, without a doubt. They pick those buzzwords that make you happy and make it feel that everything's okay. And that's how we catch them all the time, is these promises they make all the time always fall apart. And we say, okay, we voted for Party A or Party B, and we expected all these great things, because when they talk, it's like they found the fountain of youth. they're going to restore everything, do everything. Everything's just going to be one big party. And then after a little while, when they're in power, we find out very, very quickly that this is a dance in hell, that everything they said was a lie, that everything's being twisted around to suit another agenda that we didn't even have on the you know, any of the platforms of any of the parties or candidates. And one of the classic words, you know, I guess at the time would be flip-flop. That was a common thing that came up in Canadian politics. And it's, you know, when you're officially in the opposition, you have one way, and when you're a leader, you have another way, and as soon as we change roles, well, you flip-flop, and you actually take up the position of the person we voted out. Wait a minute. We changed. What happened? And so I looked at that, as opposed to just accepting it, to realize there's forces behind what we think are ruling the world that are ruling the world. And most of it's a financial interest or financial-backed interest that pretty much dictate terms to our leaders and say, it's like that, and you have to dance to the music. It costs, what, $1 billion to be president of the United States? So what does it pay? $250,000 a year for 4 years, you get $1 million back. Am I going to give up my job to work for, you know, a 1/10th of the pay just so I can be on TV or something? I don't think so. It doesn't make sense. There has to be something else behind the scenes that's making this possible.
Do you think that people, George, will ever find out what really is going on behind the scenes, not just like in Canada, United States, but really all over the world?
I think a lot of people around the world are very much in tune with what we would call a conspiracy history. And the history of conspiracy is the history of the world. Because I remember, you know, I used to work among a lot of the people who do mainstream TV and radio and such like that. And, you know, they were very frank with me, because you're meeting, you know, out of the blue and just talking, you know, friend to friend, so to speak. And, you know, one chap who does the evening news here in Toronto, you know, he just said, if I ever said anything close to the truth, I'd be fired, just like that, gone. And, you know, another chap who's, you know, a major corporate lawyer for, you know, a lot of the main media in the United States and New York City, was dating a girl who was a TV reporter here in Toronto, and they came about a little bit tipsy, and I bumped into them, and, you know, they were trying to make fun of me to say, oh, you do all the conspiracy shows and conspiracy-type things. And I answered very succinctly. Good words came to my lips to just prove the point directly and peaceably, to say, you remember what the first conspiracy was? And, you know, they were a little bit aghast. No, what's that? I go, the world is round. That used to be the conspiracy theory, because the powers that be knew it was round, but they didn't want you to get to the treasure first, so they told you it was flat. They told you there were sea monsters. But I think now that we're in the new world, that we crossed that threshold to be here in America and have been raised here for many, many long generations, I think we can safely say the world is round.
Well, but see, basically, our whole life, in my opinion, and I have to say my opinion because a lot of people will totally disagree with me, have all been built upon a lie, every single bit of it. You know, in our history, they talk about how Columbus came over here and discovered America. Well, how could he discover America if there were already people here?
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, it's simple. You know, but people, when I say that, they go, oh, my God, Nancy, what's the matter with you? And I go, no, it really is simple. I mean, think about this. You have in your history book that this man came over and discovered America. You can't discover it if there's people already there.
Exactly.
You know, so yeah, it starts with that. And it goes on and on and on. And the saddest part is that we continue to teach our children the same old lies that we grew up with, that our parents grew up with, and their parents grew up with, and on and on and on. And it's like it's time, I truly believe it is time, that truth, no matter what it might be, come out to surface so that the world can actually put, you know, be put back together in a very nice, loving way, rather than let's go invade them because they have gold, or let's go get them because they have oil and it's going to be ours, and on and on and on and on. You know, the theory used to be that war creates money. Well, that's not the theory anymore, because it's costing so much money to stay in a war that there's no way to win it. And yet, the American people keep allowing people to go over there and continue to fight this war that shouldn't even be there.
I agree with you.
Yes,
wholeheartedly. One of the best sayings I learned a long time ago, because when you're in law enforcement, you get in physical confrontations and such like that. They come along, and it's better to have a gifted, guilted tongue than a good right cross, because if you can talk your way out of something or get people to calm down, that's a skill, a great skill. But, you know, one of the things I learned a long time ago is the best fight's the one you don't get into.
Mm-hmm.
End of story, because somebody loses something, you know, on a small scale. Okay, you know, you broke this or that, or you got a cut or a bruise or something, or you lost a little bit of your pride. But on the big scale is, you know, we've got nuclear weapons now, real weapons of mass destruction. We can't play this game anymore. We have to grow up. And if we are in a democracy, if we are free, why can't we lay the cards on the table face up and show everybody what the hand is? Because no one's looking for advantage or trying to cheat anyone or take advantage of anyone. That's only fair. And we don't see that. And what I see in Egypt, where they talk about all this openness and all this, you know, democracy that they need to have, and we're setting an example. Where is it? We just signed some agreement with the United States that was negotiated in secret. Our elected members of parliament couldn't even see what's being signed, have absolutely no idea what's being signed. And in America, from your perspective, when you sign a treaty of an international standard, then it supersedes the Constitution. Well, who's giving away the house and not telling you even that they've done it?
Well, first of all, we haven't had the constitutional rights for a very long time. And again, when I say that, people go, what is wrong with you? You are anti-American. I go, no, I'm just a very realist person here. Just look at what's happening to us. Look what's going on. Look how we are not doing what we have our right to do because we believe what we're being told 24/7. And so I'm a lot like you, George. I have a really hard time. I just assume not get into a fight with anybody. But I have the hardest time shutting up and being quiet so that people can just keep going living in this la-la land that has not been a la-la land for eons, you know. So people really do need to wake up. Now, another thing that you stated with some of the information that you sent me is that the king had a fiery conversation with Obama. And we didn't hear any part of that. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, that one was funny too, because one of my top researchers sent me this, that in one of the Islamic newspapers, they actually lied and said he died just to, I guess, help people get a little angry faster or something like that. So you're not doing anyone any favors by lying to them about what really happened. But apparently, 86-year-old King Abdullah from Saudi Arabia, who's had several surgeries recently, had a conversation on January 29th with President Obama, and it wasn't a nice conversation. So I guess if WikiLeaks gets a copy of the text of that, that's probably something you can really put on a soap opera in the afternoon. It was quite heated, and the king was telling Obama that he is going to pay Mubarak whatever monies the United States doesn't want to pay him in transfer payments to support their military, which is significant tax dollars for you, $1.5 billion annually, which is terrible shame, really, because people have to work for that money. And, you know, he made it quite plain that Mubarak is a close friend of his. He doesn't want him embarrassed. He doesn't want him to have to leave his throne with his tail between his legs. And he will interfere if America steps in and forces him out the door. And this argument got so heated, being, you know, an elderly man, that I don't know if he actually collapsed, but he got ill. And so they're saying now that he did have a, you know, a medical setback. Whether that's something that aggravated part of his surgery or something is not reported, just that something did happen and he needed medical attention. So that's probably a pretty good eyeball-bulging conversation that went on. And, you know, that just gets left off the main side. Like, I learned more about America reading. This came from the Australian newspaper called The Australian. And, you know, one of the other big sources of information to find out what happens is America is in the British press. And you find out things that, you know, no one tells you in the American press. You have all this media, all this money spent, you know, billions and billions of dollars of the highest level TV, radio, and newspaper media that you could ever imagine. And here's an important story that affects foreign policy and is very, very necessary for people to make decisions on. And it's just glossed over or not told at all. And I think that's absolutely scandalous. And I guess that's why I don't mind picking up the torch to do a little bit of my share. I don't have to influence all the minds in the world, but you never know who you convince or who you talk to. I know one lady I did the show with who used to be on Mojo Radio with the show that was canceled, Cloak and Dagger. She was my sidekick for a while. And she got, you know, frustrated sometimes. And I said, don't be frustrated, because who knows? What we said one day might have been in front of a child. And when that child grows up 20 years from now, they may have to make a decision. And based on what we told them or they heard in the back seat of the car or in another room of the house while mommy or daddy was listening to the radio, we influenced that mind to think for itself. And then one day they'll be faced with a crisis and they may not even remember where they heard it or how they heard it. But something will click and they'll say, wait a minute. This story I'm getting is a lie. It's, you know, it's a snake charmer. I'm not going to go there. And we made a difference. We may not even be alive when that difference happens, but we made a difference. So never feel that because it's not instant that it doesn't count. It's like a time delay. I learned that the hard way once. I did a show in Hamilton, and I brought up about all the stolen gold that the Japanese held and put in the Philippines, which is probably another story most Americans have never heard. And $1.2 trillion of central bank gold and everything that the Japanese could pull out of everyone's savings as they invaded all over Asia. And this money was buried in something that's like an adventure movie. It's Raiders of the Lost Ark in Philippines. There's sand traps, poison gas. Everyone was killed that put all this gold in these mines that they were buried in, and every now and again they find some. The most amazing story you could ever imagine, and no one knows it ever happened. But I brought it up on a radio show, and a school teacher heard it. And the school teacher was teaching it to his children because there was a very popular book written called Warrior's Gold by a couple called the Seagraves. And he taught them that. And one day I was in the library, and there was a kid playing video games, and I was talking to another person, and he pipes up right away, oh, I learned that in school from my teacher. He heard it on a radio show once. And I go, see, it works. If we're silent, nothing happens. But if we spread the seeds, we never know where they're going to take root.
Which is real, real important. And again, I mean, there are a lot of children here today who are very, very intuitive, very, very high up with their knowledge, but yet they are being dumbing down several different ways, and they are made to think that they are weird or strange or different. And, you know, and I sit here and I go, look, these children are really going to be our future and our hope. You got to stop doing this. You know, so that's a constant struggle, because there are many, many children in this country especially who, for whatever reason, will be labeled with ADD, ADHD, given drugs until, you know, they're like zombies. And yet we continue to do that because that's what we've been told that needs to be done. You know, so I get really tired, George, of people running with their tails between their legs, not standing up for who they are, what they believe, and how they, you know, maybe think that it can be changed. You know, and the children are one of the biggest things, because like you said, you never know when it may come out. And it could come out a lot sooner than 20 years down the road, which would probably be a good thing, too. Now, you also talked about 11 countries that are on the list for revolution, and 25 for food inflation riots and instability. Let's go into that a little bit, because your next line was, nothing makes you jump like an empty stomach.
Oh, very much so. And that's something, when you start to learn about, you know, how this strategic game is played, well, then you get a little bit concerned when you see what could be a game plan starting to pan out. And this I found in a business newspaper just while I was mucking around a little bit, and it disturbed me a little bit, because you start to think, as what if this is more an orchestrated regime change as opposed to a spontaneous event? And one of the things that worried me about that was when I looked at the price of gold, it didn't really jump. Like, there, I look at that as a pulse, the price of gas at the pump. You know, if there's a real crisis, it's going to go through the roof. You're talking closing the Suez Canal, instability. And those things didn't happen. So the big money players didn't seem to be nervous. And then they start talking about the 11 countries becoming the next target. So one is Morocco, Jordan. They had a little bit already. Syria, Saudi Arabia. And then I go, ah, well, with that other article from Press TV about Hillary Clinton telling the royal family that it's over and they have to consider leaving the country while they still can, that has a whole lot more significance now. Another one was Iran, Libya, Yemen, and they're jumping up and down there, Pakistan, and that's one that makes you very nervous because they do have nuclear weapons. Vietnam, well, you know, a horrible, brutal war was fought there, you know, for way too long, and that's disturbing. Venezuela is very close to us, and that's another one where we could have a turmoil of the same nature. And then the last and, you know, most serious one was China. So I can't see, you know, China taking anything like this to any degree. They've already done a Tiananmen Square. I don't think they would hesitate to do it again if they had to. So what public opinion is and what we think in the West isn't going to really matter. But if this is somehow tied to the fact that this was an intelligence operation, they could get very angry, and they do have a very large army. So that could cause quite a mess.
Cause a big mess. Do you think, George, that it would be possible that all of the things that's happening in all of these other countries can actually, within, say, the next 5 years, be some of the facts that's going to be going on here in the United States?
Yes, very easily. The because this inflation that's coming along, we can't borrow money forever and not pay it back. I know when I was a very young student at U of T, I always scratched my head on that when, you know, when the professors would say, you can borrow money forever, never pay it back. The only codicil was the debt couldn't grow as a percentage of the GDP. Well, we blew that stop sign a long time ago. So, you know, we're in like an uncharted territory where sooner or later we're going to hit the wall. And that used to be a campaign slogan. Like in the States, you still have the debt clock on the internet. It just goes on to infinity. And we had a political party that morphed into our leadership party, the Conservative Party, that used to have a policy talking about hitting the wall. That was the Reform Party, and as soon as they started getting money from the big banksters, well, that just fell off the platform immediately. But we're still on the tracks. We're still heading for the wall at breakneck speed. Yes, we're getting caviar and pate de foie gras in the dining car, but we're heading for the wall. How soon are we going to hit this wall, and how hard are we going to hit it? And if that happens, well, not just that we could see inflation coming or a decimation of the currency, but we also can see super hyperinflation coming in. And I remember my grandfather telling me about that from his younger days in Europe. And it was, that's a monster you don't even want to look at. A modern example is Zimbabwe with their billion-dollar notes. But that would just wipe out everyone. So even these, even Mubarak, if he gets into a world with super hyperinflation, his $40 billion may only be the equivalent of $40. After that's finished with you. And that's not, you know, that could be more destructive than a war. It might even lead to a war, because once countries get on the hook for that much and their people are that angry to, you know, to get some sort of restitution or resolution solved that they can live again, just to have their basic commodities like food and water, it's over. Like, usually what happens is these people start large wars, and that's what scares me, is that they would want to start some major conflagration somewhere to take our mind off it. See, it's those evil bad guys. Don't worry about the money I stole. Don't worry about the economy being wrecked. You know, now it's war and we have to survive. And they like to use that trick over and over and over again. And not having my head in the sand, I see that's the salami that's going to come back and whack us again, as they're going to try to take us to war.
Well, they always try that. Some of the theories that are going around is that the different governments are trying to make this a one-world order, with all the same kind of currency and all the same ruling and everything being the same. I have a very, very big doubt that the entire world can be under a one-world order, seeing how we have so many different perspectives to everything. What do you think about that?
Well, I think someone's trying. Actually, there's probably a lot of people trying. What's that line in a classic old song? Everybody wants to rule the world. Well,
mm-hmm.
I don't particularly want to. Maybe you don't want to. But there is a small select group that think that that's the ultimate game. And some of them do it. It's the warriors, I guess, we remember the better. The Napoleons, the Stalins, the Hitlers, the Maos, as being potential demigods to try to take over the whole world militarily. But there's also the ones behind the scene who try to use finances by either just flat out buying something or destroying something to pick up and gain financial control over assets and resources, who basically do it the same way. And then there's probably even, we can expect that there's like an organized crime link that they try to take over their version of the global underground economy by doing the same thing, a little bit of battle, a little bit of money, and getting bigger chunks of real estate or control over countries or assets. And all these forces just seem to fight together over this control. But the best control is small, local, and independent. You're not going to destroy your own home unless you're extremely dysfunctional by doing something stupid, because it doesn't benefit you in any way, shape, or form. You wouldn't want it to happen. So to have things on a micro scale as opposed to a macro scale is far more beneficial to us. And usually when we get farther away from the citizen, the person at the bottom end of the totem pole, these megalomaniacs just get carried away with bigger and grander schemes, where if it's just small and local, you know, I used to live in a very, very small community with 2,000. My city councilor lived next door. You know, it's not too far. We just sit at the fence line and how's it going? And everything's above board and decent and honest and whatever. But when they started amalgamating communities, and now my city councilor lives in another city, and we have a much bigger population, well, even though we're still a small town, now we have a debt. Now we have all kinds of new equipment and new expenses that no one ever asked for, no one ever wanted, and are probably completely unnecessary, but the taxes keep going up, and you have no control over it now because we got out of that micro system.
Why was it so bad with the president's envoy to Egypt, having Frank Wisner there? Why was that so bad?
Well, what really bothers me, because I love the intelligence history, if there's anything that should be taught in school, just hands down, is the intelligence history. And one, probably because it's the most exciting. It's almost like military history, but, you know, just a little toned down from that. But to have Frank Wisner Jr., although his father's dead, his father died in 1965. He was, you know, a suicide victim, I hope, or maybe he had a little help. You never know when you're in the espionage business. But he was a hero in World War II, make no mistake about it. He was quite the man, did all kinds of great things. But after the war, when we got into the Cold War regime, he's the guy who set up Operation Mockingbird. And Operation Mockingbird is the complete, total buying out and control of the media. And back in the days when you had, what was his name there, Church, and forget the other chap, but one was a senator, one was a congressman. They had a committee to look into all the dirty tricks that were going on in the intelligence community. And one of the big ones that was exposed back in the 70s was this Operation Mockingbird, where they spent a king's ransom in its day to control all the major media so that everything that you read in your local newspaper was completely controlled. So I look at that, well, if you're a chip off the old block, I'm worried, because this didn't really get out in the American media that I know. I read it in The Independent, and it just doesn't even go so much about what he did in the title. It just says U.S. envoy's business links to China, or pardon me, to Egypt, and it gets into the fact that he was a personal friend of Mubarak, and he was picked by President Obama to be his personal envoy. He was a diplomat for a long time, worked in the State Department for a long time. Now he's a lawyer for Patton Boggs Law Firm, which represents Egypt in many different forums. And so there's a definite conflict of interest. So he advises the Egyptian military. He advises the Egyptian Economic Development Agency. He's represented Mubarak's government in many lawsuits in Europe and the U.S. And not one single journalist, it says in the article, raised this extraordinary connection to the U.S. government and U.S. government officials. And as soon as I see that, well, I see Operation Mockingbird hasn't really gone anywhere. No one's even told you who he is or what he's done in any way, shape, or form. So this project is probably still going on to this very day. And then the New York Times ran a glowing profile of Mr. Wisner, but mysteriously did not mention his ties to Egypt. Well, I don't think there's a mystery there. I think it was intentional that they just didn't want us to know. And what they didn't want us to know primarily was, as he told Mubarak right from the start, that you can stay. Mm-hmm. We're not going to kick you out. And that's why this debacle carried on for so long, because he knew the bottom playing card in the deck was you can stay. And all these people were screaming and yelling and jumping up and down, and Hillary came up with a backup plan to soften it up with this guy, Suleiman. And then a quick look into Suleiman's background, he's the torturer-in-chief. Oh, there's a real democratic leader. He's the guy who physically did the CIA's rendition program personally. Like, it's not just that he had people do evil things. He actually was in the room participating himself. And this was supposed to be the free, open transition to a democratic government. And that got out. And then, of course, I guess they had the last chap here, Tantawi, and he's taking over. He was the general, senior general in the Egyptian military. But again, it's just, which stooge do we get? Larry, Curly, or Moe? They're all attached. And I don't think even for a minute that we're going to see Mubarak out of the picture. He could be operating Tantawi by remote control from another location. And just now maybe Tantawi's signing the checks, and the money's going to Mubarak and Suleiman. And it just gives the illusion that he's gone, because we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. But none of these people were in any way, shape, or form decent, respectable, or the slightest bit interested in democracy or freedom or anything that we take even in the illusion of being free. And that's just a very, very sad case.
Yeah. A lot of people here in the United States, when Obama started running, they were all thrilled, you know, saying he's our savior, he's this, he's that. I personally have my own opinion. So, and I watch how all these people have now kind of decided that maybe he's not the savior. And one of your statements again was that the secret C, Obama, appears like a Democrat but loads the deck with tyrants, came on pretty strong. Because his run for president was change, change, change. And what he did was bring back a lot of the same cabinet members and the same people who'd been there forever. So what do you think about that?
Oh, I agree with you. And I have a gift, I guess, a little bit inherited from my father, I guess maybe from listening to my father and grandfather debate international affairs and talk about things for so long. But I see through these shining walk-on-water candidates very, very clearly. Because when the time comes to act, to actually follow through with the principles they claim to have, they don't. And they just fall flat. And if there was, sometimes with hindsight now, we have the 2020 vision, because we can look back and say things and we're maybe a little bit outside of some of the shenanigans the media's played on various politicians. And we have a new generation coming up that don't know about some of the tricks that were pulled. But one president I do look back on with a lot of kind regard and fondness is Jimmy Carter, because he tried to put some of these things on the bargaining table to say, you have to have a human rights record for us to do business with you. And yes, he had his nose dragged into the dirt by the media to make him look like he was incompetent or maybe not the best generalissimo of the presidential cadres or whatever. But when it comes to sheer guts, I know I found a story about him, you know, several years ago, that if there's something that just sends shivers to your spine to say, I respect you. Maybe there's things we disagree about, but he was in Africa. I think he only had two bodyguards at best or something like that. And he was going to a village in a hostile country, and the military's across the road, and they're telling him, you can't go here. You can't see what's going on in this village. And I forget how bad was, but it wasn't good. And he pushed them out of the way, and his bodyguards had to catch up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an old man. And I just go, Mr. Carter, I love you. You're amazing. You know what I mean? You risked your life, and you didn't have to, because who knows what these goons could do to you. They're all armed to the teeth with fully automatic weapons. Some of them are probably half crazy, and they could have shot you down in a second, and there'd be nothing to do about it. But you didn't care. You went through and said, even though those people are what you say you accept in America, the people who are cast aside, you know, the hungry, the needy, et cetera, the ones that are supposed to be welcome into America, you went there to give them whatever clout you could muster and pull them out of a bad situation at the risk of your life. And I can guarantee you probably didn't see a bush anywhere near the battle line in many of the wars that they've started in recent memory. So, you know, I just say I have to take my hat off to the guy and say, fantastic. But again, how come this story didn't make the big, big, big story in the United States? I probably read it in a foreign newspaper.
Well, see, what I've learned is that, because I have some friends who are in Baghdad, okay? They've been there almost since the outbreak with Hussein and everything. And so even though they're not supposed to kind of say what's going on, I was talking with one today, actually, and she had mentioned the fact that she was only looking at some of the stations over there, didn't really think about looking at the United States stations. But when she did, she found out that we over here were getting different news than what they were getting over there. And I said to her, I said, it happens all the time. I said, because I talked to a lot of people over there, and they tell me what's going on, and we never, ever, ever, ever hear about it. And I said, and that's just kind of the way things work. They keep you in probably secrecy while you're there doing, quote, your job. And then they keep us in secrecy with how they're trying to reschedule and rearrange everything so that we really don't know what's going on. And the media themselves are very much controlled. You know, right there is another breach of our Constitution. But, you know, that's what we've allowed ourselves to do, and that's what we continue to do because, again, people need to get a little bit of growth of you-know-what in order to do what they need to do. Now, another one of your statements I found very interesting was that the Israel general at the Ministry of Defense has said we're already in World War III.
Yes. That was, you know, another little jewel I found outside of the loop, and it's shocking as well. And what was even more shocking is after I read that the next day, it was as if you need your eyeballs to come out of your head twice, was that they were closing the the road to Cheyenne Mountain. Whoa, wait a minute. That's where you keep all the big toys. And when we close that road, we got to be worried about, severe sunburn coming all over the place. But fortunately, that didn't happen. It was supposed to just be some sort of a mishap where they thought they had explosives in a garbage truck taking some material into the place. But specifically, a Major General Matan Vilney, a leader in Israel's Ministry of Defense, and there's been a lot of talk lately in Israel when General Ashkenazi, the head of the Israeli military, retired. He talked about, you know, the fact that they're going to be facing wars on all their fronts, including Egypt. And, you know, this is a very, very tough time for Israel because we're going to have to fight what he called a conventional or all-out war. Very strong statements from a general going out. But this chap, when he was at a strategic conference talking about these things, it was called the Herzliya Conference, he goes, "Most people cannot understand the meaning of this change. We are now in a third world war," he proclaimed. And that's a pretty serious statement. It's a shame it was buried inside this other article of General Ashkenazi's statements about how the Israeli military has to deal with new scenarios all over and be anticipating to fight a multi-front war all at the same time. And it just slips off the radar screen completely. No
yeah.
one asks, you know, "Excuse me, sir, could you elaborate on that? Like, who's fighting who? Is it time, you know, do I need a helmet?"
Yeah, well, you got to remember that every time there's an interview of any kind, there are certain people picked because they have certain questions that they will answer, and the rest of the people kind of sit there. And that happens, like, all the time. I have another question. When all these birds suddenly dropped out of the sky in all different parts of the world, did you look into that at all?
Oh, yes, I did. Generally, because they're so far apart, they're not necessarily all connected. And the ones that were connected in one region, because you had two things happen at the same time, you had birds dropping out of the sky and you had fish kills. It just happened to be near a decommissioning weapons of mass destruction plant. And it's downriver and downwind from both. So that could have very well been one case. And then some of the other ones, there was one heck of a storm in that area as well that could have killed some of these smaller and lighter birds. And, it, you know, when you've got 200-mile-an-hour winds or something high up, it wouldn't take much to throw their bodies in quite a distance and such. So that one seemed to be a bit of, I would say, just in that area alone, poisoning, because the birds could have flown over the plant and they could have discharged stuff in the water to kill both the fish and the birds at the same time. They have the same common vector, because that's what you'd have to look for in a disease or a plant. You look for the common vector. What could it possibly be? And a lot of the variations we may not know because they're classified or they're top secret. No one's going to tell us when they generate the HARP machine or if they use a space-based laser to do something and activate a natural disaster of one sort or another. We're just not put in the loop for that. So
how
are we going to know, you know, specifically if we don't have all the facts? But from that one, I'm very, very, you know, worried about that, that the last bit of poison was taken out of the plant before Christmas, and then shortly thereafter we have this this debacle where the wildlife feels the effects. And they were probably, once you get to the point where you don't have weapons of mass destruction on the base, the security level would drop significantly about how you handle things, what you do with things, because now you're dealing with just empty containers. And they could have just goofed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just so unbelievable that we even have these items in storage all over the place. And some of them aren't in great shape. Like one
right.
big one in the Ukraine is Chernobyl. Like
mm-hmm.
they didn't pay all the money to put a real dome over top of the ruptured nuclear plant, and the temporary one is cracking and coming apart because they can't raise the money to seal it up. It's like, excuse me.
Yeah,
I think that's important.
Sign. It is. Now, you mentioned HARP just a couple minutes ago, and we only have like about 5 minutes left, but I want to get into HARP a little bit because there are many people who have no idea about HARP. So, you know, briefly, can you talk about HARP a little bit?
Well, what it is, it's called the High Altitude Auroral Research Program, and it's generally using probably what we would understand to be Tesla technology. He was probably the greatest physicist that ever lived that we don't know about, because we took all his inventions and used them in covert military programs. And even, you know, it's funny, we used to tease physics students at U of T, a few of my friends and I. You ever heard of Nikola Tesla? And they just look at you like you were coming from the moon. And I said, well, you should, you know, like this guy had wireless technology in long before we had the motor car. So in some of his experiments, he was sending electricity through the air on a frequency across open spaces long before we invented the motor car. So what's that, the 1880s, 1890s, or something like that, where the electricity would only travel on that frequency, and he would light up a light bulb that wasn't connected to any wires from the source.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept working on this program and working on this program. And as I understand it, what they're doing is they're capturing the you know, the high magnetic powers or the sun's powers high in the sky and turning this into a viable power source here on Earth. And the thing is, it's so powerful that this is like the most powerful weapon you could ever come up with. The New York Times mentioned Tesla in the 1930s and said that he had what they termed a death ray, but it was so powerful that this thing could be shot across from the East Coast over the Atlantic, and if there was ever an invasion of aircraft coming to the United States, it would shoot them all out of the sky. All their engines would stop, and they would fall into the ocean. And you're going like, wow, you know, this is the 1930s. So science fiction, science fact, this is something that is just so powerful, billions of watts of power to control or destroy anything that we could imagine. And one of the big things they can use it for is to send energy into the ground to interfere with the natural movement of the plates, cause an earthquake, disrupt a volcanic situation, make a volcano erupt. And there's no controls. We're not even told that these projects exist. And yet here's something that could just devastate whole portions of the United States or Canada or any other part of the world, because I believe that a lot of these weapons are being used covertly.
Well, see, some of the theories, again, is that they actually used HAARP to create that earthquake in Haiti. And reason being is because supposedly they have one of the biggest oil supplies under there and gold. Now,
yes.
I don't know how true that is because I didn't research it, but I mean, for them to create that, and I'll tell you why I believe it, and then we're going to probably have to go real quick, but here's why I believe it. When we had that huge hurricane that hit the Gulf, it took our government at least a week to send some people there for help. When that earthquake hit Haiti, they had security there in 24 hours.
Yes, two things. They were doing a drill conveniently at the same time.
Yeah.
Classic for a false flag. And someone took a YouTube video of the effects in the sky in Haiti, and it got posted because I did look into it and I did a show on it. So you'll find it in my archives around the time the Haiti earthquake went in there if you go into the archive section of that channel for my page. And there was somebody also working in a mine on the Dominican side, underground. And so I started looking into who owned the mine, whatever, and it was like a large plate that goes straight into where the earthquake happened. So, you know, I can't prove there was monkey business because I don't have the hard and fast facts like a journalist, but I can just say this is a possibility. But with the picture in the sky that someone saw, you know, this unbelievable visual effect that no one's ever seen before. You have to, except in China when they had a big earthquake once, it was a similar type of effect where you have this massive light ball in the sky doing all kinds of bizarre things. And we'd have to say reasonably that this isn't a natural occurrence. And if we know about HAARP, that would have to be one of our first conclusions, that it is a HAARP activity.
Yeah. We're actually out of time, but tell the people where they can hear you or get to your archives.
Yes, I'm on That Channel in Toronto, www.thatchannel, T-H-A-T. And, you know, you look up Conspiracy Cafe, and every show I've done is archived there. That's the beauty of the Internet. The podcast lasts forever. And sometimes it's pertinent to go back in time and look over things because you've never got a correct answer from anyone. No one's ever asked the question. And I ask the questions, and we reveal the information, and sometimes we get it very, very quickly. And we'll put up an alternative on what's really going on and why it's going on, because that's the only chance you have, because one day they may do it to you.
Yeah, they might. George, we are out of time. I really appreciate all your info that you gave to us, and we will have you back on probably a little bit later on in the year because there's still so much more to cover that we couldn't cover in an hour. But I will ask you to come back in So, you know, that should be really good. But, you know, thank you for taking the time.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. You're very pleasant, and we wish you all the success in the world.
Great. You take care. I'd like to thank you, the listeners, for listening, and I'd like to remind you that I am hosting the Wake Up Now conference in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area. It is about UFOs, conspiracy theories, some of the things we talked about today. There are 15 speakers coming from different places. Go to the website, www.wakeupnowconference.com. It is to help raise money to build my School of Now, so these children can actually be who they need to be and get the education that they need of truth. So I hope you have a nice week. Take care, and we'll talk next week. Bye now.